that you guys worry about within your operations? Or do we leave that to the senior managers to worry about? Do we just push it up the chain? Does it get talked about in operations? I'm not seeing any takers. I think it does. I think we do talk about these things. And I think we talk about how can we be more efficient. But the trouble is, in this day and age, we're all being asked to do more with less or the same budget as last year. And our budgets are being cut. We don't have the people resources. I've talked with a number of people in the room during today that one of the biggest struggles, and we've heard it from a number of people, and we heard it from Dietrich, finding people, finding good quality people out there to do the work, and doing work at a much higher level of technical expertise than we've ever expected of people in our mining industry in areas where, you know, the experts such as Tomas and his team and Cronal, they are verging on the actual periphery of things we never imagined. And that's already coming to fruition in terms of the trial units we're seeing in operation in Africa and elsewhere. And I think it's going to expand. We're going to see more things come about. But the real question is, what is it going to take for us to feel comfortable as an industry to say, yes, we're going to move in this direction and actually maybe change the way we mine, which is what Adrian was talking about. Maybe we can no longer have separate ore and waste hauls. Maybe the ore haul becomes the charging system of whatever form that may be to allow us to do the waste haul. Maybe we do one long ore haul and we do a couple of short waste hauls, and the short waste hauls are on the battery because we're not going to get back onto charge until we're into the ore delivery system. And I think it does bring into focus that there is a lot more to this, and it's going to take a lot more effort and exploration by the end users, by the operations, by the people yourselves. You become the owners of the technology as you take it on board. And one would hope, you know, First Mode will be there, and ABB will be there, and, you know, Wabtec will be there, and we will get oversight from Deloitte, you know, and we will see that there are people there to help us. But I think at this stage of the game, and it is a game, because we're all watching over the fence to see what the guy next door is doing. And the guy next door is saying, I'm watching you, what are you doing? We're just staring at each other. And are we making progress? I don't know. We're all watching the OEMs, and the OEMs are saying, yes, we will actually be able to deliver this by a certain time frame. But you know something? We're in uncharted territory. We're looking at the expertise that was actually delivered for an on-highway electrification system being translated into something for a heavy industry. So I do want to applaud groups like First Mode that take those first steps and say, you know something, I think we can do this. But how many hours of R&D went into that whole system? Is it countless? The man hours must be in the thousands. Yeah, honestly, and the work that the Joy, that you and George have put in over the years in terms of looking at a trolley assist and imagining it from the early days of the 70s to what it looks like today, thousands of man hours in terms of R&D, and yet we have our OEM saying, we can deliver this by 2027. 2027 is only 4 years away. That's a very short time frame. And I think we do need to ask some pointed questions. We do need to ask, what will it take, and what are you going to do for me as an end user? How are you going to help me develop my operation and the way in which I mine so I am able to accept that technology and I'm ready for it? Because yes, someone may say, here's a battery electric vehicle tomorrow. But if we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the power source, we don't have the power supply, we really are in trouble. There's a bigger picture here, and it's going to take a much larger team than perhaps many of us even imagined. And one thing I've learned from even today, just listening to our experts, is that we do need to think outside the box. We do need to actually look to see what is possible, but we also have to reflect on what we're able to do within our operations. Do we have the right systems? Do we have the right people? Do we have the right desire to want to change? And maybe, you know, I can ask our panel if there's any sort of closing comments, but I would say one thing. If we think back to the words of Peter Senge, who, when his organizational theory was put forward, he said, to actually get results, you need a domain of change, a desire to change within your community, within your workforce, within your operation. but you also need a domain of action. And that is having the right tools and the support to be able to move forward with that. It's not just about accepting new technology. And Peter Senge was in maintenance management for a mining industry. He worked with people like John Mowbray, who some of you will remember. In that era, they were so far ahead in terms of their thinking, but you know something? It applies to everything we've been talking about today. We need to have a culture change, a domain of change, and we need the tools to be able to actually support the entire system and to be able to work through that. And that's the domain of action. And that's how we get results.
Tim, can I add something else? What we also need is money to innovate. I think, you know, most mining companies say we want to be first to be second because it costs too much and we're running in commodity markets where we compete against other people that don't do this. And so we say we can't afford to do the innovation. And so the reality is that we are where we are from a climate perspective because there's a market failure, right? We didn't value the attributes of sustainability as we do now. Now we're asking mining companies to become more sustainable, but we're not giving them the oxygen. So I'm here to sympathize with miners. We have people at the front end of business saying mining has to change and pointing fingers, but making them change in an environment where it's already commodity, very cost focused, you know, no capacity, no people, yep. No funding. Yeah, well, that's just not going to work. That's just expecting the same market failure that brought us to where we are to take us out of this position. Cannot work. We need market mechanisms to break this market failure. And so we've been working on something that I think is very interesting. The hard-to-abate segments are the ones that people are ignoring because green hydrogen is too expensive. We can't make green steel. We can't make fertilizer green. We can't do all of these things. We can't make good copper that's renewable. So what happens is the mining companies are coming together to form coalitions in order to try and bring the cost down and share that. That's also not working because the next customer that you're selling to doesn't have the capacity to pay the premiums because the mining product that you sell is such a huge portion of the input cost. But now ask yourself, what is the input cost for materials for the companies at the very end of the economy? So if you take your iPhone out of your pocket, and I say this to many people, what is the value of the tradable materials in your phone? Has anybody got an idea of what the size of that would be? How much dollars do you think is the value of the 11 tradable elements of the 32 in your iPhone? What's the value? The iPhone is $1,500. What would you have to go pay if you go buy the minerals on the commodity markets in that phone? Take a guess.
$15.
$2. Yeah. So the mining industry, if you add up all the market cap of all the mining industries, is $1 trillion. Right? Apple is $3 trillion. So one company is worth more than the combined market cap of all the publicly listed mining companies. That's sort of where we are. So the capacity to pay of a $100 trillion economy on the demand side is infinite compared to, and so the emissions as well that they have to be accounting for in their scope 3 emissions comes from these upstream products. But the amount of cost that they have to pay in action to decarbonize and help with that is very infinitesimal. So if you ask Apple, you know, can you add $6 to your phone if the minerals cost $2? You're adding 300% the cost of the minerals. The problem is that if Apple pays their suppliers and their suppliers have to pay their suppliers, that premium that Apple is willing to pay as a company or a consortium of companies for decarbonizing the upstream production, it will never get there. It will be eaten up by the value chain. So we need to create a mechanism, sort of like a wormhole, if you like, or a rainbow, where we can take the people that have the money on the front end, for which the decarbonized premiums will be very small compared to what the input costs for their products are, and find a way to give it to the mining companies and say, we want you to accelerate the projects like the hydrogen. You know, if it's 400% more expensive to run that truck, let's allow you to run that truck at the same equivalent cost of diesel or cheaper, and then the demand side, far end, says, if you bring that to market, I'll pay the premium to make up the deficit. That's the only way we're going to correct for the market failure, by putting a mechanism in place to help mining companies. So I'm advocating for the mining industry because I understand the pressures that you're under. So I'm just here to tell you that Deloitte and globally are working on some of these mechanisms to try and see if we can break this trade-off. So we don't have to be second, first to be second, because if we're all first to be second, who's going to drive that cost curve down? Nobody. So we have to incent companies to be able to do that. So, you know, when First Mode produces those trucks, it's going to be expensive. So we shouldn't have the mining industry subsidize it. We should have the people that can pay for it, that's asking for the decarbonization. to subsidize it. So I'm suggesting we're trying to tackle the problem in a different way from that side as well. But that doesn't mean you can't be innovative and can't be competitive on these technologies as well. It's not going to be a free ride, but we have to make sure that there's help for the mining industry, because they're sort of sitting at the at the end where they produce all the materials and are being pressured, but they do not have the capacity. So anyway, I'm sympathizing with the industry, and I'm saying that we're also trying to find other ways to fund these innovations.
You're not to us. He should be running for Congress in Washington State to support First Mode's business.
It certainly sounded like it.
It does, doesn't it? He's on the soapbox. Ladies and gentlemen, we've taken up way too much of your time. I know the drinks are here, and you know, if anyone had been on the job, we'd have been sitting here with a scotch by now, but we're not, so we've got to go get it ourselves. So please join me in thanking Joy, Adrian, George, and Tomas for their participation. And thank you to all our speakers today. It's been a great day. Alcohol is flowing. Thank you to our sponsors. We will definitely be at this again tomorrow morning. Remember, we've got 14 presentations to go. Steve has the last word.
We're gonna run from 4 till 5:15 with happy hour because you ran over. But I want to tell everybody that we got commemorative pint glasses with Coal-Age and ENMJ engraved on the glasses. They're yours to take, but please just take one because we only got enough for everybody in the room. So thank you.